There are,
as we know, there are primarily four mitzvahs hayom of Purim. Four mitzvahs that the Megillah identifies and that we observe on Purim. There is the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, as we know. That's the whole story in and of itself. The Pasuk says in Megillas Esther that hayomim ha'elu Nizkarim v'naisim, these days are Nizkarim, they are remembered, so they're remembered through the Kriyas and Megillah, and Nasim, and we make a big deal out of them, that's a reference to Simcha, in the form of a Suda, in the form of that type of a recognition. So we have a mitzvah of Megillah, a mitzvah of Suda, and then we also have, the Pasuk identifies even more explicitly, that we are obligated in Matanos Levyonim. We have to give gifts to the poor, and mishloach manos ish l'reihem, that we have to send gifts of food to each other. So these mitzvos, presumably one would have thought that these are mitzvos d'rabbanan. They're clearly not from the Torah. They clearly post-date the Torah by quite a while. So that would put them in the category of a din d'rabbanan. However, it's often assumed, generally assumed, that that's not the case. I don't remember if we've spoken about the recent months, but there is a concept in halacha of an in-between category. It's called Divrei Kabbalah, which has nothing to do with mysticism, but refers to that which has been accepted and transmitted, and it's a reference to the mitzvos that we know through Nach, that they rim psukim in Nach, so that has a status called Divrei Kabbalah. And many poskim treat these mitzvos with the severity of a din min haTorah. It's because the Gemara says, Masachas Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yud Ches, Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah Dami. Gemara says it in a very narrow context, talking about one very specific halacha, but there has been an application of that line in a broader sense. So the Tiri Evin, who's the author of the Shagas Aryeh, the Tiri Evin in his Kedushin to Megillah and Daf Hey, so he writes that this is true for all purposes. So the notion of Sachet Vahachmer, the idea that we treat Dinah Min HaTorah with a stringency, so that applies to Divrei Kabbalah as well. Sufik Divrei Kabbalah Lahachmer, for other intents and purposes also, we treat them like Divrei Torah. Now the truth is there are probably proofs from the Rishonim that the Rishonim didn't actually sign on to this idea. You find this in the writings of the Ramban, and the Rambam, and the Raivid, and probably others, but in the Achronim, it became a little more accepted that this is the attitude. Tiri Evin was very influential. And nowadays, many poskim seem to take this as a given, that which is Midivrei Kabbalah is treated lahachmer. So that's important to keep in mind. We consider some of the interactions and some of the questions that come up with these issues, that that's often the attitude that's taken, that we treat them lahachmer because of this classification. So to mention, for example, we'll speak a little bit about the very cheerful mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. So when it comes to Mishloach Manos, there was a major debate that became incredibly influential, that this is the discussion in Shalach Manos, and you can't talk about the subject without getting into this. This is, you're obligated by Minhag Yisrael to start the discussion at this point. It really has to do with an issue that was paskened by the Ramah. That the Ramah has a psak which was very controversial and provoked a lot of discussion and led to a very well-known analysis of the subject. That the Ramah paskens that when it comes to Mishloach Manos, if I were to call up somebody and say that I'm on my way to bring you Shalach Manos, so I want to check if you're home, and you say to me, yeah, I'm home, but I have so many shalach manases that I can't even open the door. It's all piled up to the roof. So why don't you just stay home? Thank you so much for the thought. I'm so happy you thought of me. But it's okay. So says the Ramah, I'm yotzer. I've done my responsibility. That's shalach manas already. And others of his contemporaries were very surprised at that. So how could that be? That Arm Megillas Esther doesn't say offering manos ishlariyeh. It says Mishloach manos ish l'riyeh. So how does it happen all of a sudden that if you just offer Shalachmanos, that's enough? Now, as the Korban Nisanal comments, and others talk about that there is an idea, that there's a concept of mechila, and that if somebody owes me money, I can say, it's okay, keep it, you don't have to give it to me. And the way some of the Rishonim understand that is that it's a principle of ki'ilu hiskabalti. That I can say that you owe me $10, I will act as if I got the $10. I don't need you to actually give it to me. So yes, that's true, and maybe you would argue that that's what's happening here, that the recipient is in a position to say that it's as if I received it. But how do you know that that's how Shalachmanos works? That there are other concepts that are clearly guided by the preferences of the recipient. But Shalachmanos, we don't know if that's really the mechanism, we don't know if that's really the goal. And others really question this, and the Picharesh and others was a major machlokas, which apparently rolled around for about 250, 300 years until it reached the desk of the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer had a tshuva about this that was so influential, this set the pattern of discourse on this topic for the two centuries to follow. And this is still the obligatory course one has to take when talking about any issue in Shalachmanos. It says the Chassam Sofer that the question of the Ramaz Psak is dependent on what's the purpose of Shalachmanos in the first place. Why do we have such an institution? So he assumes that that will affect this question, and therefore we have to figure out what exactly is it about. So they did a little research, and he dug up that there are two positions in earlier Svarim as to what drives this mitzvah. So one was the Trumas HaDeshen, in Siman Kufi Aleph, that the Trumas HaDeshen maintained that the purpose of Shalachmanos is in order to help with another mitzvah Purim, is to help with the Suda, that we have an obligation to have a significant Suda on Purim. And we have to worry that maybe not everybody has enough in order to have a Suda. So therefore, we have to tell people to make sure to help each other out so that people will have enough to have a significant Suda on Purim. On the other hand, there was the view of the Manos HaLevi. The Manos HaLevi is famous for writing something else. This position is the second most famous thing he ever wrote. The first most famous thing he ever wrote is L'cha Dodi. So every Friday night we sing L'cha Dodi. So that's by the author of the Manos HaLevi. His name was Rav Shlomo Alkebetz. And he also wrote a commentary to Masechet to Sefer, to Megillas Esther, called the Manos HaLevi. And this line, the Manos HaLevi, is the second most famous thing he ever wrote. It's a far second to L'cha Dodi, but it's hard to top that type of a record. But after L'cha Dodi, this became very well known in its own sense. And he suggests that, and we alluded to this a little bit on Thursday in a different context, just to say it in a little more detail, that the notion of Shalachmanos is to counteract the attitude of Haman. That Haman said about the Jews that Yeshnam Echad Mfos Mufura, that there is this nation among us who is scattered and dispersed, and we can deal with that, we can destroy them. So in order to counteract this impression that Haman had about us and this view that he presented about the Jewish people, so we want to try to connect the Jews to each other. We want to be marba, ahava, v'yachva, v'shalom, v'reis. We want to increase friendship, and the fastest way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So therefore, gifts of food, that's going to do that. That's going to accomplish this goal. So this machlokas, if it is a machlokas, and there were some who argued that it's not really a machlokas, for example, the Tshuvas Pri Hasada was written by Rav Blazer Deutsch, who was a contemporary of the Chassam Sofer, was a Rav in Hungary as well. And he argued that they're not really saying something different, that really everyone agrees that the purpose of Shalachmanos is to make friends. But the Trumas HaDeshen just felt that if you're going to send gifts, so you might as well send a gift that's relevant to what they need at the time. Davar b'ito matov, that they're trying to make a suda, so if you give them food, that will help with the suda. So that's a productive type of gift. But not that there is any major machlokas here, it's all saying the same thing. But Chassam Sofer was far more influential on this point, and that voice did not prevail. And the assumption is that there is a machlokas here, there's two different points of focus as to what Shalach Manos is meant to accomplish. So that being the case, says the Chassam Sofer, he thinks that's relevant to the Ramah's Pshat. The Ramah is essentially saying it's the thought that counts. So is that true? Is it really the thought that counts? Well, it depends. If the idea of Shalach Manos is to make friends, so then you could argue, yeah, it's the thought that counts. But if the idea of Shalach Manos is that you're trying to help people who are not able to make a suda on their own, you're trying to help them out, so then we wouldn't be able to allow mechila. Why not? Because no one's going to want to admit that they need it, so the people who really do need it are not going to accept it. And also, you'd be able to get out of it pretty easily. You'll just call up your rich friends and say, I have Shalach Manos for you. And they'll say, I don't need it. And then you'll get off the hook, and the people who really do need it are never going to get it. Yes?
Why would there, if it's the same thing, it sounds like it's the same thing as Matanos of Yonah.
Ah, so that's a good question. I have to talk about that. We'll talk about the two subjects together. That is it the same thing as Matanos of Yonah, or is it a different form? Now, there is some discussion, we'll say a little bit more about this, about within this theory, to what extent do they overlap, and how that might affect some issues. But it's possible that they are strongly related, and that they belong in the same category, but they're still different forms, because we could say that they are stucco-oriented, but on very different levels. The Matanos Levionim, as the name suggests, with Levionim, is about addressing those who are truly destitute and giving them support in the basic necessities of life, while Shalach Manos is about focusing on the Sudas Yantif, the Yantif to Rabbanan of Purim, and not necessarily people who are destitute, but people who are not in a position to be able to really spruce up the meal the way that Purim would otherwise call for. So yes, they're both stucco-oriented, and they have a common core, but they're not the same format, they're not the same goal exactly, and they're not necessarily to the same people. We'll have some nuances, but it's certainly nothing too radical about saying that there are two different mitzvahs on Purim that are both geared towards helping people in need. Certainly, halavai, we should have too many actions like that. That's not really our problem. So, in any event, so the idea of this dispute, that's what the Chassam Sofer says, he thinks that that's what's going on here, that the Ramah says, essentially, it's the thought that counts, and it's only the thought that counts according to the Manos HaLevi. According to the Shuvah Sadeshin, we would not be able to rely on the thought. So he says he thinks this is what's behind the Ramah's Psak. So with this Shuvah, he changed the world, because now every single discussion that ever talks about Shalach Manos essentially always has to begin this way. That you have to mention up front that there's a machlokas, a Manos HaLevi, and a Shuvah Sadeshin, and that's at least the opening volley. So if you ask somebody, should I use a blue basket or a red basket for my Shalach Manos, so then they'll say, well, you know, a blue basket fit better on the table, so if it's about the Suda, it's a blue basket, but a red basket is more friendly, so if it's about making friends. Somehow every issue you could think of always is totally on this. It always has to come back to this discussion. Despite the protest of Blessed Deutsch and others, that it's not really such a machlokas, but Bal Yisrael has focused heavily on this point. And the Chassam Sofer himself pushes the ball further, and he says that this could also explain another psak of the Ramah, that the question could be asked, so let's say married women. Are married women obligated in Shalach Manos towards others? So he thought that that should also depend. That here again, the Ramah says that men and women are obligated in Shalach Manos, and it doesn't seem to distinguish between single women and women who are married and therefore presumably somech al shulchan balayim, who are not necessarily providing the meals for their own household in terms of economically. So writes the Chassam Sofer, he thinks that's also dependent. That if the idea is it's about helping others with their meals, so then presumably only if you're chayiv to support your own, if you're supporting your own household, then you're chayiv to support others. But if you're not the one who provides your own meals, again, economically speaking, so then you're not going to be mechuyiv to support others. But if it's about making friends, so then you could say that that doesn't tie into this at all and should be equally obligatory. So the Chassam Sofer says that when the Rama writes by women that they're obligated and doesn't make any distinction between married women and single women, he says that's, again, the Rama of the Shitaso, that the Rama is following the position of the Manos HaLevi, that it's all about making friends, and that's why you'd have these two psakim. That's why you'd have the psak that it thought that counts, and the psak that men and women are obligated equally. This is also relevant. It comes up really, it's interesting that there are a number of psakim of the Rama which might be explained based on this type of thinking. So another major example is the question of when the Shalach Manas has to get there. What if the Shalach Manas gets there early? So that's a discussion. One might have thought that if the purpose of Shalach Manas is to help with the Suda, so then it should get there before the meal. And if it gets there the day before, or whatever it is, as long as it's something that's not going to spoil, or you have a way to keep it, but it'll help you with the meal, so then that's great. Shouldn't have to get there on Purim itself. But the Rama does not rule that way. The Rama rules that not only does it have to get there on Purim, but that means Purim day, not Purim night. That's a whole separate discussion. That Purim seems to be unusual as far as Yom Tovim are concerned, and especially in contrast, since in contrast with Hanukkah, which we spend so much time on, and is its most likely partner, but also in contrast with Pesach a month later, where there's such a focus on the nighttime, so Purim is the opposite. Purim, we assume that the mitzvos are really all applicable during the daytime only, and even the reading of the Megillah, which will say, well, we do that at night, but that's a whole discussion how exactly that plays out as well. And it seems clear that at the very least, the daytime reading is the more important of the two readings, if not even more than that. So Purim is really all focused on the daytime. And under that framework, the Rama says that the Shalach Manos have to get there during the day of Purim. Now, if you're going to say, again, like the Shumas HaDeshen, so why should it matter? Let it get there the night before. Let it get there the day before. Let it get there 2 days before if you have a refrigerator. So you should be able to preserve it and use it for your Suda. So why do we care when exactly it gets there as long as it's there in time to be useful? So it seems like from the Rama that the point of Shalach Manos is all focused on the OHN moment. That means the oh how nice moment. That when Shalach Manas comes and you receive them, so you look at it and you say, oh how nice. He sent me Shalach Manas. I want to be friends with him now. And that creates a moment of bonding. That creates this attitude of Shalom Vareis. So when does that happen? It happens when you get it, when you receive it. Not when you use it, but when you recognize that they gave you this gift. So according to the Rama, that's what has to happen on Purim, that the Kiyum of Shalach Manas comes with the OHN moment, which has to happen on Purim itself. Can't get there earlier than that. Hi.
You say taking this approach of the Manos HaLevi Rama, that you could basically take care of your mitzvah by giving to your wife, even though you'd obviously benefit from your suuda, so it would be completely against the Trumas HaDeshen, but really,
so if you want to move totally away from what he says, because it would be Marba Avavach Shal Bereis
right,
with your spouse,
and
Mar says that that's the kiyum of Yehavs L'Recha Kamocha, and so the more so is a greater burden of Yehavs L'Recha Kamocha, so why should we, you know, maybe, that's definitely the easy way out, for sure, but if you have a very isolationist couple that has no friends, that lives on a desert island, you know, that might be...
Way out.
Might be something. But in any event, so this focus on the timing, there's a whole discussion about this in the Berhetev, in the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, the Berhetev quotes the Yad Aro, whole discussion about this, about sending Shalach Manas in advance, and about those who are observing Yidala, those who are observing Tesvav, a whole back and forth. So this seems to be affected somewhat by this issue. There is a tshuva of the Kajig Lever Rav, who, I think we've mentioned that the Kajig Lever in general is one who takes the approach, he always wants to be Melamed Tzchus and Klal Yisrael. So he addressed, why is it that sometimes you find on Purim people are driving around giving Shalach Manas, sometimes very late in the day, and sometimes so late that it's already after dark. So if it's already after dark, so isn't Purim technically over? So why would they still be giving Shalach Manas at that point? That doesn't seem to apply if the day is over, so don't you have to give it on Purim itself? So the Kajik Lever Rav suggested the following limud zchus. He said that there is an attitude that we have, which seems to be grounded, that when it comes to the Purim Suda, it has to be on Purim, but it can extend beyond Purim. That we have to start it on Purim, but it can then go past the time of Purim. So many start the Purim Suda relatively late in the afternoon, and it continues after Purim is technically over, but that's all still considered to be Sudas Purim, as long as it started on Purim itself. So therefore, says the Kajig Lever, so perhaps that's what these people are thinking. They're thinking that the purpose of Shalach Manas is to help with the Suda, and the Suda might theoretically still be going on even after Purim is over. So if you can go to somebody's house where the Purim Suda is still continuing and give them something which they can quickly throw into their meal, so then you'll still be Mekayim Shalach Manas, and perhaps that's where this practice comes from. It's a typical creative limud zchus that you find in many of the tshuvas of the Kajig Lever. Okay, so I used to think, no longer, but I used to think that there was one issue that did not have to any connection to this machlokas, that no matter what you think about this machlokas, it's not going to affect this issue. And that is a question that the Achronim deal with based on the Ran. It's the truth about this in the Binyan Siyan, this is for the author of the Aruch HaNer, and others, that perhaps when it comes to Shalach Manos, we should require Davka Shliach, that you shouldn't give Shalach Manos yourself, but that you should davka go through somebody else to present this gift. It's a very unusual idea. The Binyan Siyan, again, has a whole discussion about this. Parenthetically, what I said before about Divrei Kabbalah and Divrei Torah, so Shlomo Kluger and his tshuvas Elif HaShlomo has a tshuva that if one is using a shliach for Shalach Manas, so then the question comes up, so if you send a shliach to do this, so can you rely on the idea that they did it? Can you say, shliach oseh shlichuso, that there's a discussion the Gemara has about whether there's a chazaka that you can rely on the shliach that he carried out his mission. So the resolution seems to be that for dinim d'oraisa, we don't rely on shliach oseh shlichuso, and for dinim d'rabbanan, we can assume that the shliach has accomplished the goal. So what is Shalach Manas? So if Shalach Manas is Midivrei Kabbalah, it could be that that's true to the Chumras of a Daraisa, so then maybe we wouldn't rely on Shliach Oseh Shlichuso. So he has a tshuva about that, Rav Shlomo Kluger, about that issue, again, which reflects this whole attitude that mitzvos of Purim are treated like a din Daraisa. So within that framework, so is there really a need to have a Shliach or not? So it's hard to say that, because we generally have an attitude when it comes to shlichus that Kol Milsa De'ihu Lo Matzi Avid Shliach Lo Matzi Mashva, that you cannot appoint a shliach to do something that you can't do yourself halachically. So to have a concept where you can only do it through shlichus, that seems to go against the basic principles of shlichus. So here the Dvar of Ram and others talk about that, and they say that it wouldn't mean shlichus in the sense of shlucha shel adam kamoso. This is not the mechanism of shlichus that we find in other areas of halacha. It's a different usage of the same word. that we mean a shliach, meaning that it should be sent through somebody with somebody else, not that oh we'll have a din like you, a shluch hashem kamoso. That's not what we're talking about. Sometimes we use it in different ways. So, for example, the Gemara has a statement about Kohanim. That, you know anybody with the name Kajdan? So apparently, my father pointed out to him, that Kajdan is the name of Kahuna, and that it's Rashi Tevos, and it stands for Machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, what exactly is the nature of the Avodas HaKohanim in the Beis HaMikdash? Do we say that Hani Kohane Shluchei Drachmana Ninhu? Do we say that the Kohanim are emissaries of God to us? Or do we say it's the other way around, that Hani Kohane Shluchei Didon Ninhu? So either way, either opinion, Kajdan stands for that. Kohane Shluchei Drachmana / Didon Ninhu. So how could they be Shluchim of us? How could we say that a Kohen is the Shliach of the Israelim? The Israelim are not allowed to do what the Kohanim do. So the rule of should apply there also. How could you be mana Kohen the Shliach to do Avod on your behalf if you're, as the Israel, not able to do the Avod? So there, as far as explained, that it doesn't mean Shlichus in the classical sense of Shlichus Shlab Kamo. So we have a specific construct of Shlichus which has certain rules. And then sometimes we use it in a different way, to mean an emissary, to mean a messenger.
The concept of Shliach comes up. The question is Kohen doing the Omer, right? It comes up in a few places, right? I'm saying, but there's obviously the halachic concept of Shluchos. It does apply to the Kohen.
Just in terms of Shlomo Kluger's approach.
And also for Karban Pesach, Shliach.
So in those cases, it's been discussed when it's a halachic Shliach.
It seems like
it's so. It's a question. It's a good question whether for this purpose you would distinguish between when you'd apply. You could say that both cases, that even if there are two different usages of shlichus, but the question of osa shlichuso just goes to the broader question of when you ask somebody to do something for you, can you rely on the fact that they did it? So that could be a shared concept, even if they're two different ideas, but that's something to think about. So, in any event, so you have this question, so do we say, when it comes to mishloach manos, the pasuk says, mishloach manos, so therefore one is obligated to do it specifically through a shliach. So the Binyan Siyan concludes that it's not really an obligation. Others also understand like that. But either way, I would have thought that this is one question that's not affected by the Manos HaLevi and the Trumas HaDeshem. Because if it's all about making friends, so then the gift gets there one way or another. And if it's all about the Suda, so the gift gets there one way or another. So is that really going to be too affected by this issue? Question? So I used to think that. Then I saw that the Satma Rav in this Chupas Divri Yolo, so he has a point where he thinks it may be affected by this issue. So just to describe what he says in a little bit more extreme terms. So let's say as follows. So let's say I'm walking around Tinek on Purim morning, delivering Shalach Manos to all my friends. And I run into Yosef in the street. And he sees me carrying the piles. And he says, oh, you have Shalach Manos for me? So I say, oh, totally, yes, here you go. Shalach Manos. Here it is. So that's case A. Case B. Let's say next year Yosef decides to spend the month of Adar in Alaska. And so he's all alone in an igloo in Alaska. And then comes Purim morning, all of a sudden the dogs and the sleds show up at his door. And he's got a package, Shalach Manos. It's for me. I sent him Shalach Manos to get there in Alaska, like the Ramah Purim morning, didn't get the night before. Got there exactly on time. So, which case is going to engender more affection? So presumably the second one. The second one shows much more forethought. While the first case, it could be that I wasn't even thinking about him at all, but I just awkwardly bumped into him in the street, so had to give him what I had in my hands and quickly cross out the name on the label and run back to my house and get some more. So, but if I use a shliach to send it to you, so I can't use a shliach without thinking about you, Badavka, and focusing on you with actual intent. So there is an argument to be made, says the Sabna Rav, that when you use a shliach, if you're interested in helping with the Suda, so that it doesn't really matter, because it'll get there one way or another. But if you're interested in making friends, so then perhaps using a shliach is going to show extra forethought, and that it's not just a last-minute idea, and therefore it's going to engender more affection.
On the other hand, there's the social aspect that you're actually seeing somebody and you're handing them a gift, and it's much different than someone just getting it through the mail.
I agree that one can take inverse svaras here. That's a part of the fascination of this topic, how a lot of these points can be taken in both ways. So just because you said that, I'll give you another example. That there is also a discussion in some svarim, and can you give shalach manos to a katan? A katan's not chayiv mitzvah, it's a whole story, whatever it is. So can you give shalach manos to a child? So everyone, of course, because they're Jews and they're obligated in Minhag Yisrael, so they all agree that it's totally in the Chasam Sofer and the Manos Halevi. But you find some svarim that say, well, yes, clearly, because if you said like the Manos Halevi is about making friends, then you can make friends with a child too. But if it's about helping with the Suda, the Katan's not chayiv in the Suda, so that's not worthwhile. While there are others for them that say, well, if it's about making friends, presumably it only applies in a comparable age group. And then adults to adults and kids to kids, it wouldn't make sense for an adult to give to a kid. But if it's about helping with the Suda, so really the whole family is shy after the Suda, so you give to a Katan, that's also a fulfillment. So the exact same Shvara, or the exact same Machlokas, they apply in opposite ways. Again, that's, you find that many times, but I guess especially now, because we have this minig that we have to assume that this machlokas is at the center of every shaila, so maybe it doesn't matter exactly how you apply it, as long as you mention it in some context. So there you go. But there are some who can be especially justified in terms of minig. There are some who can be especially justified in following the Chasam Sofer's lead here. So, for example, the Ksav Sofer was the son of the Chasam Sofer, so it's especially appropriate that he should pick up this approach. So the Ksav Sofer and others discuss a situation, which is a little relevant to what you said a minute ago, which it is interesting, it really would be a good illustration of this whole idea in terms of what exactly the issue is. Now, practically speaking, nowadays in the current climate, I would not recommend anyone doing this, but at least historically it was a theoretical shaila, that let's say you leave shalach manos for somebody anonymously. So again, in general, nowadays it's not going to be taken well if you leave an unmarked package outside somebody's house, but in earlier generations it wasn't so charged literally, and that you could do that without causing so many problems. So the question is, would that be a fulfillment of shalach manos? So here his assumption is that maybe it should depend on what exactly our focus is. That if the idea is that you want to make friends, so then the recipient's not going to know who to be friends with. Now, you might argue, well, yeah, but then he'll just be friends with everyone, misafik, or he'll just be happy in general that somebody gave him a gift, so that will increase the bonds of friendship, even if he doesn't know who to focus on. But that's not the way it's generally understood, that he should know who it was coming from, so he should be friends with that guy, and that's not going to be accomplished if it's anonymous. On the other hand, if it's about staka, so then you really could say the opposite. That we know when the Rambam talks about the different madregas of staka, so it's considered to be a higher accomplishment of staka if one acts anonymously. And if you don't take credit for it, and you just give it without identifying yourself, so that's a better accomplishment in terms of staka. So this is an interesting test case, that in terms of what your goal is, if it's about staka, maybe you'll take an opposite approach than if you're trying to create friends. You know, along these lines, you have a discussion also. Rabbi Asher Bush, Shlita, wrote an article about this, and one of the, I think maybe Beis Yitzchak, Rav Ephraim has a tshuva about this, that nowadays there is a custom, and many shuls have as fundraisers and as other types of endeavors, that they have a joint shalach manas that everybody signs on to a list, and they do it called b'shutfus. So is one fulfillment of shalach manas b'shutfus? So that has been examined, I guess, from both angles, and one could consider whether it accomplishes as much in terms of shalom v'reis if you're not doing it yourself, you're just signing on to a joint project. Maybe you could say it brings the whole community together, that's more shalom v'reis. So again, there was a little bit of room to say both possible approaches, but this has been considered as have all these issues in light of this machlokas. I think it's generally advised that to participate in this is a good idea because it helps the shul and the community. And it should also give another shalach manas that a lot of these shilas, so if you're not sure about them, hopefully it's easily enough accomplished that you should give at least one shalach manas that you're sure about that doesn't have any tzvekis, and then the rest you can do these more ambiguous categories where you're not sure. You know, in general, it's a question, this is also a methodological question, how far do you go with some of these nafka minas that, you know, so most of these shilas say that, well, since I think it's about making friends, so therefore you have to identify where it comes from. So then sometimes people ask, okay, so if the card falls out of the bag, I'm not yotze, is that what you say? So you have to know exactly how far you can go with nafka minas. So we have the dinim that are laid out in Shulchan Aruch, and or in the Gemara and the Pesukim, and we try to figure out as best as we can what is the goal so that we can maximize our adherence to the spirit of the law, that we can do so in the most perfect way possible. But it's not always the case that if we haven't satisfied a nafka mina, that the mitzvah all of a sudden no longer is fulfilled if there's no indication in Shulchan Aruch and Poskim that that's the case. So, you know, some of these shilas, it's important to take them in the proper perspective and to know, so, okay, so if I want to say that Shalom V'reis means that it's better for me to identify myself than not, so then that's what I should do. But would it mean that if I didn't, or if the card fell out of the bag, that you're not Yotze? It's you need a much bigger support to be able to say that something is not a fulfillment of a concept that's laid out in Shulchan Aruch without that requirement. Just important to keep these things in perspective. Hi.
Even according to the opinion that Truman Sadesh and Chasam Sofer said, that it's about the Su'udah. Mm-hmm. If you give him Shalach Manos to the place where you're having your Su'udah, so that would still not necessarily be a problem, because even though, yeah, you're benefiting from it, but so are they also. They can also eat from that dish. So
correct, yeah. Still. In fact, that's what the Gemara says on Daf Zayin and Megillah, the whole discussion around there about the two brothers who would trade off having meals with each other, and the Gemara says they're Mekayim at the same time, Shalach Manos and Su'udah's Perim. That's the whole discussion of itself, but that certainly seems to be the case. Yeah, I don't think that that's really much of an issue on that Gemara. They're there on Daf Zayin and Megillah. So there is a discussion that the Ritva has a comment over there. It says that if you have a Davar Katan Le'ashir or a Davar Katan Me'ashir, then that's a problem as far as Shalach Manos. So for example, let's say you want to, let's say your friend sells an app to Facebook and makes $20 billion. So now you want to make sure he's your friend all the more so. So you decide you're going to send him Shalach Manos. So for Purim, so you send him a half a bag of pretzels and an open bottle of Diet Pepsi. So are you yotze with that? So if it's about the Suda, so I guess somewhere in his lavish table this could fit in, but if it's about making friends, so then one could argue that that's not really going to really make his radar screen. That's what the Ritva seems to be saying, or vice versa, that if he sends this to you, so maybe this will help with your Su'udah, maybe he's trying to say that that's the difference between you and him now, that that's where you're holding, but it's also not going to impress you so much. You know how much he's capable of, and can't even give you a whole bag of pretzels, so it's not necessarily
going to... Coke.
Right. Well, it's a matter of preference. But so then he's not going to necessarily impress you so much. So that's what the Ritva seems to be saying, that there is a problem there. It's interesting. In the Maram Shik and others, they have a tshuva, which you have to assume it's a very specific issue. But they talk about, let's say, for example, you have something in your house that's Asur Bahana Midrabanan. And you have a friend who's a cholish, who's allowed to eat in the Sahana Midrabanan. So you can't eat it yourself, but you can give it to him. He could use it for his parmesuda. So they thought that this should be dependent on this issue as well, that if it's about helping with the suda, so he'll be able to use it for his suda. But if it's about making friends, so then he's not going to be so impressed. He knows, oh, he managed to find the one guy he knows who's able to eat this, so he palms it off on him. So then that's not going to necessarily impress in the same way. It's interesting, because it parallels a concept that we have in Hilchos Gneivos Das. And if the Gemara says that if you give, you have meat that's not kosher, has to get a nush in it, whatever it is, and you give it to a non-Jew, you sell it to a non-Jew, so the Gemara says you have to explain to him, even though he's not prohibited to eat this, but you have to make sure that he knows that it's not kosher. Because if he thinks it's kosher and that you could have eaten it, so he'll be machzik tov to you to a greater degree. You'll think, oh, this is something that's valuable to you, and you're giving it away even though you could eat it, and he doesn't know that it's really something you can't eat. So it's not worthless. He's happy to get it rather than you throwing it out, but it's a much different appreciation when you can't use it yourself. So if you had failed to reveal this, it would be Gneivos Das, because he'll have a lot of Hakaras HaTov to you, and you don't deserve that much Hakaras HaTov. You deserve a little bit of Hakaras HaTov, not as much Hakaras HaTov as if it was something that you actually could eat. So that whole Hafzakas HaTov, that's the same concept here, that the person, if he knows you're giving him something that you could benefit from yourself, and you're still choosing to give it to him, so then there is Hafzakas Tov that is associated with it. But if you're just giving it because you have to throw it away otherwise, so then that's not necessarily going to have the same level of Hachzakas HaTov. Based on this Ritva, they also, Rav Shalti has a discussion, I think, in the Mishnah Siavetz, which also kind of highlights the two contrasting positions here, that we find sometimes that Beis Din is Kofel HaMitzvos. Sometimes that Beis Din will compel somebody to perform a mitzvah. So there's a whole discussion, should we say that Beis Din should be Kofa on Shalach Manos? So as he points out, this really does seem to be dependent, because if it's a tzedakah type mitzvah, so by tzedakah we do find kfiyah sometimes, especially when it's a communal issue, that Beis Din can be kofal hatzedakah, that Beis Din will compel people to support other people. But if the issue is that it's about making friends, so you can imagine when you show up at somebody's house accompanied by two U.S. Marshals saying, here, I am obligated by law to give you this gift of which I have made sure to fulfill the minimal requirements. So you're not going to necessarily have such an impact, and maybe that would undermine the whole concept.
Wasn't the whole point to be kofan until he says, what's happening?
So again, right, you showed up at the door, all bloodied and right, with your arm in a sling, and you say, and you're reading from a card, I hereby send mind, body, and happy to give you this, so it's not going to necessarily...
Deep down, I really do want
it. Right. I'm sure I will eventually appreciate how much... I'm so sorry for what I did. And so it's not going to necessarily have the same kind of impact. This was invoked by others also, just we're almost running out of time, just mention how this ties into a few other issues. It's interesting that there is a discussion... I think we mentioned sometime in the recent past that whenever you have a mitzvah that doesn't have a bracha, so then this forum discussed, so how come this mitzvah doesn't have a bracha? And there's always an order in which, it sounds a little cynical the way today I'm saying about the special templates of certain discussions with the Chacham Sofer. So there's a template to this discussion also, that all the issues of brachos on mitzvos, so the first Maramakum that gets discussed is the Tshuvas HaRashba, which is the Minyan Ches, where he talks about certain brachos, certain mitzvahs that don't have brachos. And then, if that doesn't work, so then you go to the Beis Yosef in Taf Lamed Beis and see if that works. So, what am I talking about? It's the Rashba and his Tshuvas. It sounds like he's saying, there's some dispute if this is what it means, but it sounds like he's saying that if you give tzedakah, you don't make a bracha. Why not? Because it's a mitzvah, it's tali b'das acherim, that you're only going to be able to successfully give tzedakah if the other person accepts it. And maybe we should worry, he may not have meant this, but this is the way many understand it, that maybe we should worry that if the other person doesn't take it, you're not going to be yotze. So you can't make a bracha about something you don't know how it's going to turn out because it's totally on somebody else's cooperation. So based on that, some of the Acharonim said, so there's no bracha on Shalach Malos. So you could have explained it based on the Rashba. Except that the Ramah messes that up. Right? Because according to the Ramah, you'll be Yotze even if the other guy doesn't take it. So if you follow the Ramah's psak, so then the Rashba's answer is not going to work. Now, parenthetically, they're not exactly the same thing, because the Ramah might agree that if the guy throws it back in your face and says, from you I don't want anything, then it might not be Yotze Shalach Manas. He said in a case where the guy happily accepts it, but happily accepts the thought, but doesn't need the actual action, so then it's the thought that counts. So it's not necessarily mukhrach from the Ramah that it's always up to you to be Yotze. It could still be that if the guy really rejects it angrily, you're not Yotze. But so the question has come up, but there are other explanations about why it is that there's no bracha. So source number two, you go to the Beis Yosef in Hilchos Chametz. It talks about why when we are Mevatel Chametz, we make the bracha on Bir Chametz. So he suggests that you can't make a bracha on Bittel Chametz, because Bittel Chametz really takes place Belev, and anything that's Belev is not subject to a bracha. So based on that, there are those who say that if the purpose of this mitzvah is really shalom v'reis and the kiyum is belayed, and you can't make a bracha on that. Well, that's a little bit of a hard answer, because even if that's the purpose, but still there is a maisa mitzvah, so why you can't make a bracha on that maisa, it's not that satisfying. There are many other approaches. The Das Sofer, again, is a descendant of the Chassam Sofer. So just to say what Aryeh brought up before, he discusses the issue of the overlap between Shalach Manos and Matanos Levyonim. And what he basically assumes is that really they are two different forms of the same kind of mitzvah. But one of the key differences is that Matanos Levyonim is explicit staka to explicit Levyonim. And Shalach Manos is supposed to be more sanua, so to speak. It's supposed to be something that looks like it's a gift between friends, but is really a form of staka as well, more of a concealed type of staka. So they are essentially really two different kiyumim of the same notion. So therefore we can't have a bracha, because the bracha is going to have to label the mitzvah explicitly what it is. That's how bracha works. And here the whole purpose is to fudge the line between Shalach Manos and Matanos Devyonim and what exactly is going on. Okay, could be. There's a lot more to say about this, but just in the interest of time, we'll just mention one or two other things. So there is an interesting discussion. Some of the Sfarim have, some Sfarim talk about whether you can give to your Rebbe, because the question of whether your Rebbe is called Reyehu, and the Pasuk says, B'shalach Manos Ishto Reyehu. Others thought that discussion was a perm joke. What are you talking about? It's different usages. And another discussion...
Are you about to love your Rebbe? Is this about to
the Rebbe? I hope so. Yeah, so that's part of the point that's brought up, that you say, ki yigach shor reyehu, that, so if you, where exactly are we talking about? So the whole discussion, when the word means and what it doesn't mean. But, so there were those who maintained that that's a Purim joke, and they also said that about another issue, that the question came up, what about, let's say, distributing Divrei Torah? That if you give out Divrei Torah instead of food, so could you be in fulfillment of Shalach Manos? So you could say this question in two ways. I mean, you could say that we sometimes find in halacha that learning is like eating. Sometimes eating is like learning. It depends on how you do either one. But you sometimes find that learning is like eating. It comes up a lot. There's a Zohar that says like this, that Shal Shudis you can fulfill by learning. And it's brought up especially in the context of Erev Pesach, Chalios B'Shabbos, to try to figure out how can you have Shal Shudis Shabbos afternoon if you can't have Chametz at that time, and you can't have matzah either. So how do you address the need for Shal Shudis? So sometimes they talk about the Zohar. So you could say that from that angle, that maybe Torah is like food, so you should be able to give it out in the same way. Chaim Brisker famously commented about the Shal Shudis idea that he didn't recommend it, because maybe somebody will shlug up your Dvar Torah and it'll be a kamandalesa. And he says, you can't shlug up a gefilte fish. It's going to be gefilte fish no matter what, but the Dvar Torah could be made to disappear. You know, it could be a little bit about your attitude about refuted Dvar Torah. But in any event, so, yeah.
It's an interesting comment. the Ramah wrote his first book, it's called Mechir Yain, and he writes in the introduction that he did it in place of Yain. Ah. He wrote the Parish on Megillus Esther to send to his father, because apparently wine was scarce.
So I don't know
how serious he was about replacing Shlach Manos, but
That's exactly what I wanted to mention, though. So it's interesting, exactly to that point, that so you could come at it from the angle that it's like eating, but let's not go that far. So then maybe you would say it's totally on this machlokas, that according to the Trumas Adeshin, you have to actually give food to help with the Sutta. But according to the Manos Halevi, maybe there's room to say that sharing Divrei Torah, Torah is Simcha, this is also going to bring people closer. So it's interesting if our whole Mahalach has been that the Ramah is following the Manos Halevi, that it's all about making friends. So it's possible, at least, that historically both the Manos Halevi and the Ramah actually did this. That the Sefer Manos Halevi and the Sefer Mechir Yayin of the Ramah were given out by their respective authors as Purim gifts. So that seems to reflect their Shita, perhaps, that this could work for Shalach Manos because it's all about making friends, and Divrei Torah could accomplish that as well. So again, there is a lot more to say about this, but we'll see if we find time before Purim to say a little bit more. Okay, maybe next Sunday we'll also have to fill in some other things about Purim. But we could mention also that there is a fascinating idea that was expressed by the great Rabbi Menachem Zembo, whose name is so prominent in Sugyos of Hotzah in the first part of Shabbos. So make reference to him here as well, that Rabbi Menachem Zembo took note of the Gemara in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yudalad, that the Gemara says that Gemara asked the question, "Amayinis chayvu saneim shel Yisrael b'osel hadar klaya?" What did the Jews of that era do to deserve being threatened with destruction? So the Gemara has two theories: either mepnei shenenu misudaso shalosa rasha, because they partook in the inappropriate suda of Achashverosh, or because Nishnashtachavu Tzalem, that Haman had that idol on his necklace and they were bowed down to the idol. So, says Menachem Zemba, the two reasons that we have for Shalach Manos could correspond to the two failings that we had during the time of Purim. That if the issue is that we're worried about inappropriate suda, so how do you make up, how you mechaper for an inappropriate suda? Through an appropriate suda, through a suda's mitzvah. So that's what the suda of Purim is. And therefore, if Shalach Manos is there to help out with the suda, so it's a way of working to counteract that failing of the Jews at that time. And if the issue is some type of quasi-Vodazarish, Neshtachav Ulitzelen, so Chazal have a Maimers, a Medrash in Parshas Tzav, and elsewhere there's ideas like this. And Chazal say that Gadol HaShalom, Shalom is an amazing thing. Shabbazman Shehem B'chabura Achas, if the Jews are able to create one unified whole, Afilu Avdu Avodazara Ani Mochalahem. Even if they have Avodazara in their past, I will forgive them, which is not to be misunderstood. It doesn't mean that one can perform Avodazara for the sake of Achdus. It means that as a kapara for Avodazara, Achdus is effective. And in that sense, the other goal of Shalom Vareis that the Manos Halevi talks about is a parallel kapara for that failing of the Jewish people. And just to tie this into what we said on Thursday, so we find these issues again in Parsha Shkalim, that the notion that the Gemara has, we mentioned this thing, that the purpose of the Shekel is to perhaps anticipate what Haman would ultimately do, taking Shkalim so that he can destroy the Jewish people. So we mentioned that idea that maybe just like the Manos Halevi said, that we want to counteract Haman's statement of Yeshno Amecha, that's scattered, so too the Machzeh Shekel brings us together, and also as an atonement for Avodah Zarah, if that was one of the issues, so then that's what the Machzeh Shekel brings about as well, and hopefully all of these together are successful in attaining their goals. Okay, so God willing, tomorrow I hope to finish the sugya.